Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may just disconnect at this time. Now, I will turn the meeting over to Mr. Dennis Watch. You may begin.
Good afternoon and welcome, everyone.
Hi,
this is Rick Duchel.
Schatz at the National Science Foundation, along with Rick Duchel. We're going to be leading the question-and-answer session. We're the program staff at NSF that oversee the Science Learning Plus initiative, and we're delighted that you're interested in asking questions and seeking clarifications. Plus, before the operator comes back on to describe the process again for inquiries and questions, we have a couple of reminders. First of all, this question and answer session is being recorded, and we plan to make the recording available on the same web page that you got to see about the PowerPoint and the audio commentary and the phone number for this session. So you'll be able to go to that probably by the middle of next week.
We also want to reiterate the invitation for you to join other practitioners and researchers in the scheduled open space event that will occur 1 week from tomorrow on Friday, May 23rd. The deadline to apply is close of business today, and I want to remind you that there is no reimbursement for travel from NSF. So if you're interested, please send a message to me at rduschel, D-U-S-C-H-L, at nsf.gov. Again, that is rduschel, D-U-S-C-H-L, at nsf.gov, stating your interest and a very short bio of 25 words or less so that we can put things together. Thank you.
And I think now we're ready to open the lines for questions, so I'm going to have Ebony get back to you, and we'll start answering any questions or inquiries you have.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. Your name is required to introduce your question. One moment, please, for our first question. Our first question comes from Joe Turner. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and thanks for the opportunity to discuss. Two kind of simple technical questions to start the ball rolling. As I look at the requirements for the six-page narrative single space, is the project summary included in those six pages, and how do you want citations handled in the materials?
The summary is not. When you go into Fastlane, and you might want to look at this even before you try and submit it, you'll see that the summary gets entered. It's all these click on this box and that box and so on. You'll find that the summary, which has these three text boxes for the three parts of the summary, are separate from the narrative. So the narrative itself is separate from that. Any citations, certainly if you can fit them in the six pages, that's fine. If you find that you can't, you can put them in as a supplementary document.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Noor Newcomb. Your line is now open, and if you would like to ask a question, please dial star 1.
Hello?
Hi, Nora.
Hi. You clearly do not want, a traditional kind of informal application. You want partnerships and networks. And although some constraints clearly come from the dollar amounts, I'm wondering if you've given any thought to the ideal sort of size and dimension of these kinds of networks.
Well, this is a two-phase process, and phase one are planning grants, or network grants, as they refer to them over in England, to help partners establish, a cohesive plan and an orientation towards a set of research that they want to take on. So the looking out to phase two in terms of the larger sums of money that would be available That's where the richness of the, you know, the, that should be the target of your thinking now, is about how do we get to that point? How do we apply for a planning grant that will help us, you know, have some resources that can pull together a compelling group of institutions and partners that will take on some of the, you know, goals and objectives that we've outlined in the solicitation. Dennis, you want to elaborate?
And I would say is you're right that the money will limit how, you know, so you could have a grand network, but there may not be enough money to handle that sort of thing. So I think you need to look very honestly at what you want to do, what's a reasonable network, given the kind of money that you have, not just for the planning grant, but thinking forward to the partnership grants.
Do you have a follow-up, Nora?
Yeah. Can you describe more about the history that led to the solicitation? I did read the the report that the British consulting firm gave to the Wellcome Trust, but I'm wondering if there's more thinking that is evident in that report.
Okay, so that's a good question. So for those of you who aren't aware of what Nora's saying, is that there's a report that you can find on the Wellcome Trust website. And the title of the report is Science Beyond the Classroom, Analyzing the UK Science Education Community, the Contribution of Informal Providers. And it has a publication date of November 2012. I can say that that report certainly informed our deliberations and our conversations with the Wellcome Trust as we set up this partnership. It helped frame some of the important ideas for the field, and we felt that many of the problems and many of the recommendations and suggestions contained in that report were very relevant to the context that we have here in the United States. Another report that accompanies that, and it's important to take a look at this, everyone, and that is the Wellcome Trust leadership prepared a response to that report, which framed, I think, in a little more specific detail what the Wellcome Trust felt were some of the more salient or important issues, problems to face. So this is important because we are advising people who come in with ideas is that these ideas need to be attending to the UK and the U.S. Context for what we see as the needs of the community. Dennis?
No, I think you covered it very well. Thanks.
Our next question comes from Sandra Throvenin. I do apologize if I got that incorrect.
My name is Sandy, and my question is, can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I want to make sure. First of all, thank you, you know, for this opportunity for the Q&A, but my question kind of follows up on what Nora was asking about the phase one, since it is kind of, you know, getting people together, gathering up ideas, but are there any specific deliverables or something tangible that reviewers might look for or want to see come out of this?
I'll let you get that one, Dennis.
The most important deliverable in my mind is what you plan to do so that you can produce a phase two proposal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's again, depending on how robust a network you already have or you need to develop, really to outline who it is you're going to talk with, what you're going to bring together, how you're going to refine your question. We don't expect the research question and deliverables to be totally fleshed out, but at least this is the basis upon which you're going to do the work, and that by the end of this, you're going to have a well-defined research question, the literature search that you need to do in order to why you're going to do what you're going to do, and so on. And have our partners well identified for a phase two proposal. So that's really what we anticipate coming out of phase one.
Okay, thank you. And then one last question regarding the 115. Are indirects included or not included in that amount?
That would be included.
Included? Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Dennis?
Our next question comes from Sam Taylor. Your line is now open.
Hi. I think you touched on this in your answer to the last question, but I just want to get specific. In the phase one proposal, is it expected that the partners you will work with are already in place and that you can identify them? Or can you, during phase one funding, actually do that exploration to see who your most appropriate partners would be?
Again, yeah, you're right. We did touch on this. I think it's the process you plan to follow. You don't have to have all the partners in place, but it really is what are you going to do? I mean, if it's a, you know, anything you can talk about the kinds of partners or some possible partners, anything of that sort will be very useful. But you, but it,
I think it would
the goal
be,
of the phase one really is to allow for the development of the partnerships.
I think that it would be useful, Sam, if, you know, you had a letter of commitment that, you know, you weren't going to go on a fishing expedition, but you already had some people in mind, even though you hadn't started conversations with them, at least, you know, you would have a letter of commitment that could be a part of the proposal that, you know, they would be sitting down with you to participate in a partnership network grant.
Great. Okay, that's helpful.
Our next question comes from Dan Zevin. Your line is now open.
Thank you. So I heard a rumor. I know that Ireland is not part of the UK, but I heard that partners in Ireland would be acceptable. Can you tell me if that's true or not?
I don't know.
We don't know, but one thing we've been saying in general, actually, so this would apply to people from Ireland, is that we've had a number of inquiries. Can people in the EU participate? This is especially true from some of the people in the UK who already have partnerships in the EU. And in general, the response is those things are fine as long as the research question has validity and implications in the UK and the US. So in that sense, I think you can certainly look to that as a possibility. But it really does come back to, you, is the outcome of what you're going to do relevant to the UK and the US?
Yeah. So a little geography lesson here. Northern Ireland is part of the UK. Ireland is not.
Right, right.
So, I mean, I don't know what, you know, what rubric or sense here, but I don't think that, you know, the nation of Ireland would be looked at, but you know what? We'll get that information from the Wellcome Trust because that's their call, and we'll see if we can get that posted.
Okay, yeah, an Irish person told me they thought they heard that, so.
Definitely Northern Ireland.
Yeah. No, definitely not Northern Ireland, though, no.
Okay,
and
thank
what
you.
What we heard was this, you know, people outside the UK and US, it's a possibility, so I think that Ireland would fit into that.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Anna Stryker. Your line is now open.
Hi. For the phase one proposal, how much are you looking for as far as laying out what we imagine it would lead to? How fleshed out are you hoping that would be?
Well, I think we would certainly want to know the problem. We would like to see some emergence of research questions or some, you know, some ideas of what, you know, you're thinking about. You don't have to. We're not anticipating any data collection.
Mm-hmm.
We're not anticipating, you know, any pilots or things like that. It's really about, you know, getting your partners together to, as Dennis said, the product of this is really, you know, a fully developed phase two proposal. And therefore, we would want enough information that we could assess, that the panelists could assess whether or not what you're proposing is compelling, is unique, and viable.
All right. And I do have one more, if that's all right.
Yes.
All right. There are some mentions in the solicitation of exploring more than one informal learning environment. With that, is that looking for projects that ultimately will look across, say, different museums, or really look at different types of informal learning contexts, so museums, after-school programs, you know, web series, things like that?
I think it could be both, or not both. It could be either.
Okay.
I guess I'll put it that way, or both, in that what we wanted to do was make sure people weren't thinking about, oh, I have this exhibit. Well, we've had questions like this. I have this exhibit we'd really like to understand how people do with it or how they interact with it or whatever. That this really is a step above that in thinking broader, so across institutions or across venues. It could be either way when we talk about nature of the proposals.
So when you take a look at this Wellcome Trust report that Nora was referring to, you'll see that one of the ideas there is to talk about the broader learning ecology that exists for individuals who are both on the formal and informal side, and the richness of varieties in each of those spaces. So as you're thinking about your partners, you may have a children's museum that's, you know, working with another school district that might be working with an after-school program to begin to look at, you know, the richness of the integration of those activities. It could be a network of different institutions that are, you know, looking at the same sets of communities, you know, in some of these, when you look at this report, you'll see that there's a whole host of institutions that are identified as, you know, delivering learning experiences to youth, and I think that that's probably the best way to characterize it. You know, who are the individuals, who are the institutions that are providing learning experiences to youth?
I think I'll make one more comment related to it. Of course, the overall AZLE program is focused on advancing the field. That's why we added the A in the title. And I think that's another important part of this. No matter what venues or learning experiences you look at, it's looking beyond how does it inform specific activities that the individual part, the people that are in the partnership, how does it affect them? What is the outcome that's going to be useful to the field in general, whether it relates to exhibits or after school or whatever? How is it going to be useful to the field in general to advance what we're doing?
Great, thank you.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Claudia Merson, your line is now open.
I think you may have just answered my question. I wasn't looking at the full report. I'm trying to find that from the Wellcome Trust. But the press release really talks about museum visits, science festivals, and theater performances. We have been thinking of putting together a multi-university grant. Is it your sense that these proposals are really more geared towards outside the university in more public venues like museums and festivals? And
I would say no. I mean, there's lots of museums on university campuses.
Right, but so you feel that they must, if we did a multi-university grant, we have a museum, but some of our partners that have stronger educational research departments don't.
I don't think that it's not the expectation that the partners all be from the informal sector.
Okay.
And so, it comes down to the compelling problem and the space that you're investigating to help build our knowledge in the field.
And I'll add to this. I think one of the things, and again, I think where the idea is to bring together partners with different expertise. But it is fair to say that a goal of this initiative is to build a strong relationship between practitioners and researchers.
Okay.
So it would be important, you know, and whether that's in a university museum, there's university outreach programs, if it's all related to universities, or to programs outside the university. But the partners don't have to have all of those elements. It's how you bring the partners together in that mix to do the kind of research that we hope will occur in these partnerships. But that building a strong relationship between practitioners and researchers is important to us.
And may I just ask, squeeze in one more question?
Yes.
In terms of identifying partners in the UK, is there, would we get that kind of assistance in the May 23rd call?
Dennis, why don't you describe the group?
So what the Wellcome Trust has set up is it's a group site, GROU.PS. The announcement that went out from CASE, I don't know where you heard about this question and answer session, but in the email that went out with that, there was a link to the groups site. And I think if you just Google groups, Science Learning Plus, you would come up with that website. It's you might consider it a bit of a listserv, a Google Hangout. It's something I think that's very British, but it's GRU.PS. And that's a place where people, and I've already seen, because I've joined, I've seen a number of people say, we're interested in doing this. We're looking for this kind of partner. And that's one of the places that we hope people will go to find partners that are doing interesting things that relate to what you want to do. The event on the 23rd itself will be all U.S. participants. You know, there may be some conversations, there may be some ways you link, but it's not set up specifically to help identify partners in the U.K. Anyone want to add anything else, Rick?
Nope, that's good.
Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Richard Hudson. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you. There are a lot of interesting questions here. A quick one, do you think this is a science project or a STEM project?
I'll go for STEM, Rich, because the S is in
so
there.
So this comes back to trying to define STEM. I think that we're not necessarily saying it has to be integrated STEM, that you're dealing with all four in some integrated way. So some group may want to really focus on mathematics or engineering or science or some combination, and we're very open to all of those possibilities.
Okay. I knew that was a simple one. From the NSF vantage point, with the investment that you've made in CASE over the last several years, and some of what CASE has been doing is exactly what's described here, how do you see this new opportunity complementing or adding to what CASE has done or maybe doing something that CASE hasn't done?
I think it would be deepening and broadening. You're right. I mean, the CASE network has been a tool for communicating to the public, to our community here in the United States, and I guess abroad as well. But the again, from the Wellcome Trust report, there's been identified sort of gaps in our understanding of why does this work, under what conditions, and for whom. And it is that kind of enrichment of deepening and broadening our understanding of the learning design of learning environments, the broadening of participation for communities, the links to workforce development, the kind of, some people will call them the pipeline issues or the pathways of learning. We need to get better and richer understandings of those fronts.
Last one, can you distinguish between researchers and evaluators from the vantage point of this proposal?
Well, it would only be a personal interpretation, Richard. I don't know that that would go very far. I mean,
okay.
We're not, the NSF doesn't have some kind of a party line on that front. But, I mean, researchers are asking questions that are more than just a an affirmation of reaching a goal, which is typically sometimes what evaluators do. Did you achieve what you wanted to achieve? The research is going to get more at the how and the why.
I would not go back and say we're making a distinction between evaluators and researchers, because those are individuals. But it is a distinction between research and evaluation, in that this very much is in understanding, you know, fundamental principles, and how does that help us understand better what we do, what are the impacts of activities in informal STEM education, STEM learning. And so a person who's an evaluator, many of them are evaluators and researchers at the same time, so it's the research we're after, who's doing it. That person just has to be able to show that they have the capability to do that kind of thing. And while I have the floor, I'm going to go back to the Case comment. Case has been very involved in this process and has been very supportive, and we want to make sure that it's very complementary. I think we have a great opportunity to learn from what our partners in the UK are doing. It allows us to leverage more money to do informal STEM research. So there's a lot of activities that I think we'll be able to do, and it will make it a stronger case for Case. So I think that will be very good for us.
Okay, thanks very much.
Next question comes from Martin Stockstig. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Martin Stockstig at the National Research Council. I wanted to just confirm that the Republic of Ireland is part of this. I went to the Wellcome Trust site, and I thought the English should know better whether they include them. So I looked it up. So, yes, Ireland is part of it, the Republic. And my question is very practical. The phase one is a fairly limited amount, depending on how you see it, when it comes to actually doing real project work, but fairly a fairly good amount if you want to develop a partnership. Is there any expectations on how this money is spent and what limitations are in spending this money? I can see this being used entirely for getting people together, travel, conference. And is there an expectation for how much of this is going through personnel for doing background research? Is there any limitation on how this money is spent?
No. This is, matter of fact, we've talked a lot about this, really. We expected maybe there'd be a fair amount of travel to bring people together, some money for personnel to do some sort of research or, literature search or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, no, there are no constraints, you know, other than the regular constraints of NSF policy on capital acquisitions and things like that.
Which, can I follow up with another question? If I understood it correctly, five of these planning grants will be, phase one grants will be funded by NSF and five by the Wellcome Trust. Is that correct?
Correct.
Is there any guidance or is there any way in which you coordinate with the Wellcome Trust for people who have a choice to make, whether their partners will funnel this through the Wellcome or whether it's going through the NSF? Is there any thinking that you had beforehand about how people ought to think about this in terms of positioning their grant, either through England or through the United States?
Well, one of the things, Martin, is that you can only be a lead PI on one proposal and only one proposal.
Okay.
But you can participate in other proposals.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
We will be checking between our two institutions as to, you know, not having duplication on lead proposals. And that enables or, you know, networks, if people choose at this point in time, to have a British or a U.S. partner.
I think the other thing that in my conversations with people is to really think about, is there a logical lead organization? So if somebody, somebody is really taking the lead on it and will be organizing the meetings and so on, then the logical thing is for that person and that institution organization to put in the proposal. But to a large extent, we have not been making specific recommendations on how, that's really up to people who are thinking about partnering to decide. which they would rather
right.
do.
I mean, it's basically it's a silly question of probabilities that I'm also implying here, which is I don't know how many partners in the U.S. will be lead and submitting versus in England, where the pool could potentially be seen as somewhat smaller. You see where I'm going with that, right? Anyway, I don't think you can answer that question. I just want to raise it.
Statement that that people need to think about.
That's right. Yes. Thanks.
If you would like to ask a question, please dial star 1. Our next question comes from Charles Hutchison. Your line is now open.
Hi, it's Charlie Hutchison in Boston. Actually, my question was going to be about research and evaluation, so it's been pretty much covered. So I think I'll just pass. Thanks.
Thank you.
One moment, please. I'm unsure how to pronounce your last name, but our next question is from Sally. Your line is now open.
Sally, are you there?
Sally, your line is now open. Please unmute your line. Our next question comes from Sam Taylor. Your line is now open. Sam Taylor, your line is now open.
Sam asked a question earlier. I don't know if he...
Yes. Sorry about that. I had a mute on. The restriction about ages, 0 to 19, if we were proposing research on a project that was multi-age groups but included that age group, would that pass muster?
I would guess that my response to that, Sam, would be that there would have to be some prominence towards the youth focus.
Okay.
Yeah, I would. I'll second that. And that again, it depends on how you end up presenting what you want to do, and that the primary focus needs to be that younger age.
Got it. Thank you.
One moment, please. Question comes from Robert Hirshon. Your line is now open.
Oh, hi. Yeah, this is just actually two very short questions. One is there seems to be, or I might be incorrect, but it seemed like there might be an emphasis on places of science. Are radio, television, internet also valid?
Very much so. We've already had some inquiries asking questions about, you know, working with television productions and things like that. Certainly on the table, yes.
Okay, and totally unrelated, if there are two institutions, one in the U.S. and one in the United Kingdom, both, you know, equally valid as PI, you know, possibly the lead institution, does it make sense for them both to apply, one in the U.S. and one over there?
You wouldn't want to apply for the same project. We would know from each other, and that would. So the answer is simply no. You
okay.
need to pick one or the other.
Okay.
One moment, please. Our next question comes from Ron Ontinger. Your line is now open.
Oh, thank you. These are great questions, and I've enjoyed listening to everyone. Two questions, one more specific and maybe one a little more philosophical. The specific one is, if there's a youth development organization such as YMCA or 4-H, et cetera, that have sites in the U.S. and the U.K., would that be considered a cross-country partner, as that might then partner with a research organization in the U.S. or the U.K.? That's one of my specific questions.
Yes, I would definitely say that that's an appropriate partnership that crosses between the U.K. and the U.S.
Okay. And then my a little bit more philosophical, following up on the question about kind of priorities in case, et cetera, but more just priorities. Are there certain of the kind of major questions that NSF is interested in? And I should just say that we are one of the partners with the Moore Foundation, MacArthur Foundation so far, and I'm enjoying that partnership. But just wondering, from the NSF perspective, are there certain questions that you are prioritizing in some ways? I think, Rick, you mentioned the ecosystem question in and out of school. Are there certain questions that you're hoping to get responses to, or you're just...
Well, I would direct you to, in the solicitation, in the section that outlines the Science Learning Plus program, you'll see that there is additional information that lays out the goals and the objectives of the program. That's what I would point you towards in making sure that whatever you were doing was picking up on one or more of those.
Okay, I was just curious if there were any specific priorities that...
Yeah, I don't. I think our goal, if you look at, and I would tell you a page in the solicitation, not just you, Ron, but other people, but it depends on how you download it as an HTML or a PDF, and so it's a different page depending on how you do it. But there's a set of objectives and funding priorities, and
right.
We haven't really said there's one, you know, that, so in our heart of hearts, this is more important than that. Because we really do want to see what interest and what are the areas that the field thinks are really important to research. I do think the three things that we have said a lot to people, which is really embedded in those two areas, is the goal is to really understand the impact of informal STEM learning experiences. To develop tools, assessments, evaluation tools that can cross venues, and to build this relationship between practitioners and researchers. And those fundamental principles, I think we'll look for a lot within all of the proposals that come in.
Good answer.
Not that you need to deal with all three. I mean, again, I don't want to you can't deal with everything. You have to decide, this is my workable project. Here's what we're going to focus on.
Thank you.
If you would like to ask a question, please dial star 1. Our next question comes from Kellyanne LeConte. Your line is now open.
Yes, my question is regarding the role of PI. And I am interested in hearing your perspective. I understand in the past that PIs, it's been favorable for the PI to be to have a PhD, and I see the restrictions. I'm curious, given the emphasis on joining practitioners and researchers, is it appropriate in this case for the lead to not have a PhD?
Well, most certainly. Many of the leaders of informal institutions may or may not have a terminal degree at that level. So there's no restriction on that. What we do find out is that certain institutions and academia may, inside that institution, have some restrictions on who or who cannot be a PI on a proposal to NSF. So you would need to check with your institution.
I think the goal is really to have the right mix of people to do what you want to do. And some, you know, that'll have PhDs in some cases, but maybe not in other cases.
That makes sense. May I ask another question?
Yes.
I'm curious if you can talk a little bit about the role of the evaluator for this planning proposal. Since it's good practice to involve them early in the planning, how best can we characterize their role? I understand you're not looking for an evaluation plan on this part of the planning part. So is that just in the narrative and other pieces just to explain their role, or are there other places where reviewers would expect to see the evaluator?
Well, one of the things that is now new at NSF is that we have in all of our solicitations some paragraphs that begin to talk about the common guidelines for evidence. And there is an expectation that whatever thoughts or ideas are put together in terms of research design, measurement, and the nature of the questions you're asking, the evidence you need to collect, is that there's going to be some, examination or consideration of those particular procedures. So I would like to believe that whoever you whoever you decide to become, an evaluator partner, would be someone who could be conversant in, helping you with the design of what it is you want to do and what evidence or measures you need to secure.
I think it's evidence that this person will be involved in phase one, but there's not really an I don't know that you'd say there's an evaluation component to the phase one proposals because these are planning projects, but you would want to have them involved to take you to the next step of how you're going to do everything in phase two.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Charles Hutchison. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Charlie Hutchison. I just want to pick up on the goal of building relationships between practitioners and researchers. Is it appropriate that the relationship be between practitioner and practitioner, with the researcher being the researcher? Going back to Ron's question earlier about YMCA, for instance, to YMCA, sharing methodologies, sharing approaches, strategies, and so on. Is that an appropriate goal?
I think it's very reasonable to have, and I may not understand your question completely, so let me take a shot at it, and then Rick can add more. I mean, I think it's quite appropriate to have this practitioner-to-practitioner relationship, but all of the hubs, maybe not the hubs, all of the spokes that are involved in your partnership, all of the players, should have, it's a relationship between them all. So you'd want to be able to look at the role between the researchers and the practitioners, as well as the relationship between practitioners and researchers. So if you have researchers in the UK and researchers in the US, they too are forming a partnership. So it's more of a web rather than individual partnership. So I'm not sure I'm answering your question. So I'll let Rick do it now.
Well, the way you framed it in terms of comparing programs, that comparison should lead to something that becomes generalizable information and knowledge that would inform how you would structure and implement, experiences for youth. So there has to be some outcome or something learned, if you will, through the partnership that you're putting together.
No, I do understand that, but I was just a little tripped up by the relationship piece. So let's say the YMCA or whatever, After School Alliance in this country, wanted to partner with the Out of School Alliance in England to share strategies. The role of the researcher is simply to figure out what, how they related or how they, what the effectiveness of that relationship would be, as opposed to promoting research in abstract. That's what I'm asking.
I don't think it's the evaluation of how good the partnership is. I think it's how good the partnership is going to be a reflection of, is it going to help you get some answers to some of the pressing problems on how to deepen our engagement effectively with youth.
Okay.
And maybe we're just speaking with different kind of terms in our mind, so I'm not sure if I'm helping with that answer.
The question comes out of my observation that After School is a much more sophisticated and well-developed institution in the U.S. than in the U.K., much more broader. And so there's a huge potential for working with Out of School Alliances and so on in the U.K. to share our experience and see how they can use it and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the predominant purpose of the project I have in mind.
I like what you said, how they would use it. So that's an empirical question.
It sounds very much like almost an implementation or dissemination question you're asking. And I think this is the goal here, not that you can't do that sort of thing, is to be, again, kind of one step in addition to that in terms of really understanding what it is about the program or the relationship. It's back to how does that help advance the field in general versus how do we just take what's happening in the U.S. and build a more robust program in the U.K. Or vice versa, whatever it may be. So I think it's got to have this additional, this is really a research agenda that we're after, and it needs to have that component. It doesn't mean there can't be we're going to do something, we're going to implement some strategies in the U.K., but what's the research question that goes with it that we're going to understand at a higher level, so that other people who are thinking about doing this will be able to do a better job at what they're doing.
Okay, thank you. That makes sense.
Our next question comes from Sally. Your line is now open.
Thanks. Hi, it's Sally Glenson. Hi, Jennifer. I am interested in following up on that question, actually, because the whole idea, one of the main ideas I feel from what I've read that you have here is you're stressing capacity in the field. And the question is, is it the field of not only the practitioner but the researcher themselves, so that part of the planning for phase two would be how is capacity built in both sectors in terms of doing this kind of project? Did I understand that correctly?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think this is the issue of building capacity both in practitioners and researchers and the relationship between them.
Good.
Is really a key part of the initiative.
Good, because one of the things that came up in the welcome meetings was what counts as impact? And it feels like a lot of people are in the dark about that in all sectors, you know, I mean, in terms of what's valuable. It's both how to measure it, but what to measure, too. And I think, the learning that can go on between both would be really valuable.
Well, Sally, that in and of itself is a possible topic, is new measurements, new indicators, new ways of looking at, not only learning of science, but motivation, persistence. Again, you'll see some of that in the Wellcome Trust document about the need for a richer understanding of how to capture measures of learning.
Great. Good. And then two tiny little ones. One is anybody going to be at Excite to talk further about this with anybody there at the Excite conference next week?
No one from NSF, no.
Okay. And then the other is preschool use. It says from kind of cradle to school age, but I just wanted to double check because there's a couple people I've been talking to wondered if preschool youth still would have an emphasis as well. It isn't just school age.
I believe that would be okay, don't you, Dennis?
There's a lot of interest in the pre-K, so I think that would be quite appropriate.
Great. Thank you.
Next question is from Philip Piketty. Your line is now open.
Hi. Following up on that last question, I think my question was largely answered. Asking about measures, is it then possible that projects would focus on measures and other information tools that are used to kind of capture this richer understanding of informal learning, and that would be the focus of the project?
And I think that would be quite appropriate if that's what the focus is, again, adding to whatever the details are, but it's certainly the whole issue of measurement of impact, if that's the word you want to use, is very important as part of this initiative.
Great. Thank you.
If you would like to ask a question, please dial star 1. If you would like to ask a question, please dial star 1. Our next question comes from... Your line is now open.
Hello. Hi. This is Ina. I hope you can hear me. I'm not sure. First of all, again, yes, thank you so much for doing this. I have a question. The solicitation says that partnerships are encouraged between UK and US organizations, and this has come up before. For this planning phase, phase 1, do you really think that this, obviously it would be a strength, but if you do not have those partnerships, more maybe only in the US for now, but you have plans on building those with UK, would that make for a already a weaker proposal in your mind, if you can answer that?
It would not. That's part of the purpose of having the planning network grants, is realizing that it may take some time for you and anyone else to put things together. That said, it's quite possible that you might want to position yourself with a strong U.S.-only partnership, demonstrating how well you can function and what you have to offer, and then proceed after the fact with a partnership with another network or another unnamed network that would then include some participation from the U.K.
Excellent. Thank you.
And I'll second what Rick said in that. I think the big thing is really the intriguing, compelling research question will be the most fundamental thing that we'll look at. And certainly, what's your plan to develop that relationship? And so it's having a good plan that says, oh, yeah, if the reviewers will say, yeah, that looks like it'll work, they're going to be able to figure out a partnership.
Excellent. Thank you. Can I ask a technical question as well?
Please.
You mentioned Fastlane, but somewhere I read you could use grants.gov.
Yes, you can use either grants.gov or Fastlane. Grants.gov has a two-step process. You
yep.
go into grants.gov and then they transfer it to Fastlane.
Right.
And we've had some challenges with that transfer occurring, and we've had to deal with you know, getting things transferred late and that sort of thing. So our recommendation is to use Fastlane.
Thank you very much.
But it's not required.
Great. Thanks.
Our next question comes from Karen Elinich. Your line is now open.
Hi. Thank you. Two questions. First, are you looking for any particular geographic distribution for these projects in phase one?
That's out of our hands. I mean, we're always looking. The general policy in NSF is to, you know, go for the best proposals, but we also, with duplication of good ideas, you know, we're encouraged to try and work with EPSCoR states. We're encouraged to work. Those are states that don't necessarily get a lot of grants. So there is some. Rationale for maybe, you know, trying to include partners from those states that will make you a little bit different.
Okay, great. Thank you. And the second question is just if you could perhaps comment on how you perceive the purpose of the open space discussions next week.
Certainly. So the open space technology is a is what it's referred to is an event which is meant to bring people together to help tease out and sharpen focus on ideas, compelling ideas in this case, that would get at how one would be successful, how the whole project would be successful in attending to the goals and the objectives set out in the solicitation for Science Learning Plus. So the open space is meant to be a free-flowing, self-generating process of posing ideas, discussing ideas, finding thematic structure around those ideas, elaborating them in certain ways. If along the way, when we anticipate this will happen, you begin to identify, you know, a person or an institution that says, wow, they're thinking like I am, or I think I could complement what they want to do, then that would be the icing on the cake in terms of your leading with the identification of a few people. One of the things that I think is important for everyone to know is that the open space event in London and the open space event that will take place here at NSF, all of the various groups that self-identify to begin to tease out the details of an idea and the elaboration of how it might be executed, that information will be captured. That information will then be posted on the CASE website as well as the Wellcome Trust website. So the outcome of both of those open space events will be made public.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Before we go on, I just remembered or was recalled to me that Jamie Bell, who's the head of the CASE Center, is going to be at Excite. So Sally Duensing's question about will something happen at Excite, he will be there, and there's some discussion about having an informal conversation for people who are interested in learning more about Science Learning Plus from Jamie. Again, more of a, I won't say it's an open space, but a conversation that people can have at Excite. So do, if you're going to Excite, do try and find Jamie and find out if anything's going to be happening. Okay, I'm done.
The next question comes from Martin Stockfetch. The line is now open.
This is Martin Stockstig again. Hi.
Hi, Martin.
And I know the line of questioners is very short now because I came on quickly. So if you have questions, put them into the line. Otherwise, we're running out, it seems, which might be a good thing. Hi. A question about timelines. You're saying that this will be done through panels again rather than individually doing this through ad hoc reviews. What is your sense of when these planning grants will be beginning, if everything goes well? What's your internal timeline for when this will be granted?
So the deadline for the grants is mid-July. We plan to run our panels third week of August.
Mm-hmm.
Then that always takes a couple of months to sort through the process. We intend to have an event early September in which the Wellcome Trust and the National Science Foundation will come together to look at our top proposals. And then following that, some decisions will be made. So, Dennis, would you say that it's fair to say that we may be able to have some announcements October, November? Because
yeah, I'm sitting here saying November.
What holds this up, as some of you know who have been through the process with NSF, is that anything we do is totally a recommendation, and the actual award process gets done in the budget and financial and awards, and that they go through and scrub, and particularly if there's any new performers out there, if you've never had an NSF grant before, that puts you into a whole other process that takes a little bit longer time. And so, you know, I think, you know, we may have our deliberations done sooner, but we would not release any information until such time that the proposal has gone through all the necessary steps
right
for an award to be made.
And one reason, Rick and Dennis, why I was asking, and I know this, you guys have been thinking about this very hard, is if you get this work going, potentially funded work going in, let's say, November, maybe December, when would you expect the solicitation to come out and the deadlines for the phase two? I mean, that's sort of say, if this is to build on phase one, then people have to have a chance to do some of the good work in phase one. So what's your expectation for when phase two will begin based on this time of timeline?
We haven't had that conversation yet, Martin, with the Wellcome Trust.
Right.
As some of you know who have been close to the process here, is that we didn't get started on this when we had hoped to. We started this whole process with phase one several months later than we thought we'd be able to get out the door. So that's why we had to say in our announcements that, you know, the details for phase two will be forthcoming. And I think we'll know a little bit more about that when we probably have our September meeting.
Thanks.
Are there any other questions?
I'm showing no further questions from the phone lines at this time. Again, as a reminder, if you do have a question, please press star one now.
And certainly, while if there's any last questions, let me just remind people that if you're interested in participating in the open space event on the 23rd, a week from tomorrow, please write a note or send an email to Rick at rduschl@nsf.gov by the end of today. So it's a short time from now. End of the day, it'd be great if it's end of the day on the East Coast. We'd love to have you participate in that open space event. And also, I'll remind you that for those people that you might have known that couldn't get free to be part of this question and answer, we will have the audio recording of it up on the website probably certainly by the middle of next week, and you'll just go to the same website as you did to find out about this event.
And we do have a couple of questions that just came in. We have a question from Dan Seven. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. I just want to make sure I understand the difference here between other AGILE programs and Science Learning Plus. Other AGILE programs have had a strong emphasis on advancing the field and gaining new knowledge. So is part of the difference here that maybe a lot of this new knowledge gain is not actually being put into practice?
No, it's more that the, again, going to the goals and objectives that are set out in the Science Learning Plus program, there's a bit more specificity as to where we want that work done.
Okay.
And actually, a lot of people have asked this question as it relates to the research program type for AGILE. And, you know, if you look at them, you could say, I could take what I want to do for Science Learning Plus, and I could have applied through the research program type, and that's absolutely true. So as Rick just said, this is a little bit narrower. One, it's got to be It's got to be a partnership between the UK and the US.
And it's most likely, and we do this for all proposals, is that if you have written a proposal, so for example, if you're going after an eager grant or a rapid grant, those are supposed to be around an idea that is not fundable through any current solicitation. So if you submit something to Science Learning Plus, which could be funded by some other area, we probably wouldn't entertain it, encourage you to submit to that other area. So it is important to tailor your proposal to the goals and objectives and the information that, you know, we're targeting with Science Learning Plus.
Okay.
And I'm going back, there's a big focus on the practitioner-researcher partnership. So, I mean, if a researcher would want to come in and do a study of public's perception of some topic, that might well go into the research component of AGILE, but it wouldn't be appropriate for Science Learning Plus. So it's a different focus, even though it's closely related.
Great. Thank you very much.
We have a question from Richard Hudson. Your line is open.
I was putting my name into the system just as you, Dennis, were talking about the event on the 23rd. Just to clarify, there won't be any way to participate electronically at that event. It's all face-to-face.
That's correct.
Okay. Thanks.
And again, if you would like to ask a question from the phone lines, please press star one now. One moment. I'm showing no further questions at this time.
Well, this is probably a good time. We're at an hour and 15 minutes from when we started, so this is a good amount of time. It was going to end at 15 minutes anyway. So I'll let Rick have the last word, but before I let him have the last word, I'll just thank you all for calling in, spending your time asking questions, and for your interest in Science Learning Plus. We look forward to getting proposals on July 10th and for an exciting beginning to what should be, we hope, a long-term relationship between the Wellcome Trust, the Economic and Social Research Council in the UK, and the Noyce, Moore, and MacArthur Foundations, and, of course, the NSF here.
Right. Yes, so thank you also for participating in today's Q&A. A reminder that if you haven't visited the Wellcome Trust site for Science Learning Plus, you should do so. A reminder that you should look at the groups network for signing up and listing your interests and your name and your institution. A reminder to also look at the 2012 report that you know was the commission study by the Wellcome Trust that sort of led to some of the foundational ideas that are part of the Science Learning Plus program. And also stay tuned and keep, if you're not, you know, receiving information from the CASE network, you should do that. And finally, any further questions that arise, do not hesitate to contact either or Dennis and I. Thank you.
And my thanks to Ebony and to Jane, who just came on in Ebony's place. Thank you for your help as operators.
Thank you. That does conclude today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.
Thank you.